Somalia is on the verge of unprecedented famine. The UN is warning the nation is facing its worst drought in decades. Millions of people are in desperate need. But is aid alone enough, and can a humanitarian disaster be averted? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. After years of unprecedented drought in Somalia, a famine is now expected to be declared within weeks. The United Nations says since January last year, more than a million people have been forced to leave their homes in search of food and assistance. Its humanitarian chief, Martin Griffiths, is calling on the international community to deliver aid immediately. We have a lot to get to with our guests in a moment. First, here's my report on the situation on the ground. It's been a prolonged drought in Somalia. Some of its regions haven't seen rain in 2 years. Desperate for food, water and grazing for their cattle, thousands of people are fleeing their homes, walking long distances under the scorching sun. Mohammed Ahmed Diriye and his family left their coastal city. The 60-year-old says he had to walk more than 1,000 kilometres to get to this desolate camp, hoping to get food and shelter.
If you walk some distance out of here, you will see lots of bones. Lots of animal bones piled up on the top of each other. From all the corners, the sight of these bones will shock you. Not only here, but throughout the region.
Somalia is one of the poorest countries in the world. Battered by decades of violence, war and political instability, this drought could be its worst yet. The UN fears the crisis could be similar to the 2011 famine, which killed more than 250,000 people, half of them children. Thousands have died so far. Malnutrition is killing children every day.
This child was admitted some 4 days ago and came when the child was not even alert. The child was not even alert. It was a bit unconscious when the child came in. But we resuscitated, put on medication, and that's why today at least we can see that we can note some improvement.
The situation is critical. Aid workers sometimes take the limited resources from the hungry to treat those who are starving. Somalis blame the Russian invasion of Ukraine for depleting international aid they used to receive every year and for soaring food prices.
The war between Ukraine and Russia has worsened the situation of oil and wheat, which are not available. We bring the food all the way from Mogadishu, and the prices have skyrocketed since our land is dry and unproductive.
The most desperate live in central and southern parts of Somalia under the control of Al-Shabaab. The UN blames the armed group for contributing to the 2011 famine by deliberately blocking or burning aid deliveries and targeting aid workers. For the time being and until aid arrives, hundreds of thousands will have to deal on their own with cholera, malnutrition and starvation. Hashim Ahlbarra, Al Jazeera. Let's bring in our guest in Mogadishu, Adam Al-Hirsi, the Somali Minister of State for the Environment and Climate Change. He's also the former deputy chair of the National Drought Response Committee. In Geneva, we have Martin Griffiths, the United Nations Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator. And in Nairobi, Samira Guide, Executive Director of the Hiral Institute, an independent security think tank based in Somalia. Welcome to the programme. Let me start with Mr. Griffiths. You paid a visit to Somalia. You witnessed the impact of the drought. Could you tell us more about the scope and the magnitude of the crisis?
Yes, when I was in Somalia, which was about a few weeks ago, as you know, there was an announcement by something called the Famine Review Committee. It's a global analytic committee, which said in terms that there will be a famine in specific areas, particularly of southwest Somalia, within the period of October to December of this year, unless there is an extraordinary humanitarian effort to prevent it. And this is because we've had four failed rainy seasons. A fifth is due in the last month of this year, and it's due to fail. And we even fear a sixth failing in the early months of next year. So we know that there are about 300,000 people at risk in those specific parts of southwest Somalia that have been flagged for famine. We also know, perhaps an even more appalling statistic, is that in the famine that took over 250,000 lives a decade ago in Somalia, mm-hmm. half of those who died before famine was formally announced. So it's not unreasonable to assume that many deaths are happening even now, possibly out of sight, possibly in areas where security is difficult. So we're in very, very serious straits now. The race is on. Famine's knocking at the door.
And this brings me to ask Mr. Adam about what's the government doing, because Adam, as you might have heard from many aid workers in Somalia, the biggest concern is that the government's action so far might be too little too late, given the fact that at least 500,000 children are at risk of death.
Oh, thank you very much. The fact that we have created SODMA, actually revamped SODMA, Somalia Drought Disaster Management Agency, which is a governmental independent organization that comes under the Ministry of Interior. And the president of Somalia appointed a special envoy in his first week or days in office, shows that we were serious about the droughts. The committee I was part of, actually the deputy chair of, was created by the former prime minister. So droughts were happening in the middle of an electoral crisis. When the crisis stopped and we had elections, and this government came into place, we moved with the speed, and we started revamping SODMA. SODMA is operational now, working hand in hand with UN OCHA and WFP and other aid organizations, and the special envoy is also working actively to solicit resources for the droughts. Mm-hmm. So basically that's what we are doing in terms of responding to those crises caused by climate crisis. We didn't play no part in exacerbating.
Martin, to those who are watching the situation unfolding in Somalia, they're just wondering, why is it taking the United Nations too long to declare famine in Somalia? Why is the process itself complicated? Is it because of this conservative, cautious approach before coming to the point where you say officially there is famine in Somalia? What is it? What is it at play there?
I mean, it's a very good question. There has been developed over many, many years this extremely strict analysis based on three indicators: levels of malnutrition, levels of food insecurity, levels of maternal mortality. And only when these indicators, the green lights go on, is famine finally formally announced. And the reason why it's important to be careful about this is famine is not, as you know, like hunger. Famine is different. Famine is a viral phenomenon which destroys lives and indeed takes away children first, principally through disease. We need to be extremely careful about being clear that this is not just hunger, not just food insecurity, this will be famine. And the response to famine differs also. And what the humanitarian agencies in Somalia, with the government, with Adam's people, are doing, they're trying to ensure that those who need it, and I want to come back to that, and the difficulty of getting to them, those who need it get food, yes, but also get health care and safe water and sanitation, because the people who die early in famine die of cholera and waterborne diseases. Hunger consumes them, but it's disease that takes them off. So you have to treat those suffering from famine in a very particular way. That's what the agencies are seeking to do at the moment. But I have no doubt that we are seeing famine on our watch in Somalia. And it is the first of, I fear, more to be announced in the Horn of Africa.
Samira, we are on the brink of a catastrophic famine in Somalia. Aid agencies have been sounding the alarm for quite some time, but we don't get a sense that the international community is really committed to stepping in as soon as possible to try to contain this crisis.
Yes, unfortunately, not just the international community, even Somali local actors. And I really think this is because there's so many competing priorities, especially in the Horn of Africa. We have conflicts in Tigray, we have the Sudan crisis, and then, of course, the Ukraine war. And because of all of this, and then there is the fatigue that this is constantly happening in Somalia, we have recurrent drought, recurrent floods. Because of this, you get the sense that people are kind of tired of this, and so we don't get the response that we need. But really, I think this is the worst that we've had in 4 days. Decades, and it's really time to shift attention to Somalia.
Adam, we can see those somber pictures of tiny emaciated patients in different makeshift camps. And one of the concerns in 2011, one of the biggest problems, in fact, in 2011 famine was that the most desperate were basically in areas under the control of al-Shabaab. And al-Shabaab was using that famine to win the hearts and minds of people, trying to block and aid deliveries. It was accused by the UN for contributing to the crisis. Do you have similar concern this time that in those areas it could be just too late?
What we're trying to do is to prevent the situation that you have just mentioned. There are hotspots where the malnutrition is severe. And those hotspots are concentrated in Baidoa and Bur Hakaba and Southwest State in general and a few other places in other federal member states. These are where the IDPs are concentrated. Mm-hmm. Now, IDPs came from villages. They were farming villagers and pastoralists. What we are trying to do is to help those IDPs to not only leave but also restart their livelihoods back into their villages. Yes, we are worried about it, but we also are confident that if everybody chips in and we can get all the support we can garner, we think we can avert a famine and mitigate the drought.
Martin, people had to walk for thousands of miles, hundreds of miles, to get to the makeshift camps. Mass exodus towards Baidoa, she has become somehow the focal point now of the crisis. About 800,000 people moving to that vast area. Many are saying that in areas under the control of Shabab, it's difficult for many people to flee. How are you able to assess the situation, particularly in those areas under the control of al-Shabaab? Do we get a sense of clarity about the magnitude of this particular crisis in those areas under the control of al-Shabaab?
Well, I think it's a very good question, because as awful as the scenes that you are, thank goodness you are, showing on the screens, what we fear is that that's nothing in comparison to the scenes that may be playing out right now in those places from which people have walked. In other words, in their places of origin, many of them, as you say, under the control of Shabaab. But we estimate that only about 10% of the places where people are suffering are probably under the control of Shabaab. And even there, it may be possible, with the extraordinary fortitude and courage of Somali frontline responders, be able to get to the people there what they need. But what we fear is that the people who don't walk are the ones who may be suffering even more. And when we get to them, we will see scenes which will make even the current images that we're seeing on our televisions look pale. And I want to make one additional quick point about international support. I'm from the north. It's people like me, with my habits and my responsibility for climate change, which have caused this. Nobody in Somalia is responsible for this catastrophe, this four failed rainy seasons. this fifth and sixth to come, unprecedented, as we have said. And yet, Somalia, which only produces less than 1% of carbon emissions, has yet to receive a penny of climate financing, which has been promised in the billions, as we know, and indeed Africa as a whole has only received 4% of climate finance. So yes, it's true about the war in Ukraine taking our attention elsewhere. Yes, it's true that war has spiked prices, as the woman in your introduction said. Yes, it's true that donor budgets are stretched. All of this is true. The climate finance was promised for exactly the purpose that we see ready and willing and needing in Somalia.
Samira, while we're talking about the potential for a massive tragedy there, we tend sometimes to forget that plus the fact that you have to deal with famine, you have the outbreak of many diseases, you have pneumonia, you have measles, you have cholera, and all this, when they come together, along with the problems that nation faces, a nation that has been battered by decades of war instability and poverty, it just looks like a scenario for a huge tragedy.
Yes, it's quite unfortunate. I think the reason why, you know, these droughts are common in the Horn of Africa. You have Kenya responding to it, you have Ethiopia responding to it. But the biggest challenge is because of Somalia's state and the three-decade-long, you know, civil war that has just now we have emerged from. Because of all these factors, then you find our responses are not as they should be because of the territory that's still controlled by Al-Shabaab that we don't have full control over. Then you find that the population is really at, disadvantaged and at really high risk. And for all these reasons that really we should shift our attention to this nation that doesn't have the capabilities that others do have.
Martin, I do have some concerns here, which are basically because of what's happening globally, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, other political and global problems. People tend to forget that just next to Somalia, we're talking about a huge area, which is the Horn of Africa, where you have Kenya, Ethiopia, you have Somalia, you have Djibouti, where 66 million people could possibly be food insecure.
Yes, 6 million people, many of them, by the way, whose way of life is never going to come back. We have all spoken to people in these drought areas, and they tell us they have lost livestock now more than once, and it is not possible for them to resume what has been their way of life for generations. So this is an existential threat to the way they live, and it's an astonishing statistic. But Somalia has the highest urbanization rate in the world. And the reason is, of course, because of exactly what we're talking about, is that people need to walk to get to places to find new livelihoods. Now, finding a new livelihood is not quite as important as saving lives, but we need to save lives for the purpose and in the context and with a framework of giving those families a chance for the future. That's why, as I say, climate finance needs to come urgently. It should have come months ago. We managed together with the government to avert the famine 4 years ago, as you know, in Somalia. We did it because there was enough money up front to prevent the deaths. This year, I'm very afraid to say, we are not going to repeat that success.
I have a follow-up question with you, Mr. Martin, if you don't mind. How much money do you need now to be able to say, I can contain the crisis in Somalia?
When I was in Somalia, I said we needed $1 billion. We've received $1 billion. It seems like an awful lot of money, but these days, we need about $1 billion to get us through what I think is going to be another 6 to 9 months of huge, huge tragedy. Because I think we'll get two more rainy seasons failed, and that's absolutely unprecedented. The scenes we saw in 84 are going to happen again. And you know what happened in 84? We had a global movement of solidarity that spoke up and that raised money and was once in solidarity with people. We're not seeing that yet, despite what's happening in Somalia. And I think it is because attention is elsewhere. We have to raise that consciousness as well, but with a message that if we do get good funding, we can save thousands and thousands of lives. There's no question. We've seen it done.
Adam, from your experience as a former deputy chair of the National Drought Response Committee, could you tell us about the challenges that you're facing as we speak? What are the immediate needs that should be there for the people of Somalia to be able to overcome this unfolding tragedy?
Of course, first thing people need is aid on time and access to aid in the places that they most need are concentrated. I want to also mention something that Martin Griffith has said about climate finance. Somalis are suffering a climate crisis they were not part of creating. Last 40 years, they didn't see a drought like this. And there are four consecutive rainy seasons that failed. Droughts happen when it's every 10 years. Now they are happening every other year, if not every year. And that's because of the climate change, the climate crisis. Mm. I think it is fair to say Somalis are bearing the brunt of the climate change. It is climate crisis in Somalia. And whoever is financing or trying to mitigate the climate crisis or providing funds towards this adaptation of the climate adversity, I think they will have to focus on Somalia and timely. Back to your question about what people need. People need access to aid. They need safety in their places. They need to be able to come to the places where there is aid, or they need to access aid where they are before they leave their small villages and camel camps. That's what they need the most right now.
Samira, are we talking about the need to rethink the way local communities in the Horn of Africa should live their future, given the fact that we're talking about prolonged cycles of drought, climate change, and this is something which is likely to become a fate in a way or another?
I really believe that, you know, we are at that stage. Somalia has been consistently facing, you know, recurrent droughts, recurrent flooding, just like the minister just mentioned. I think between 2014 and 2016, the River Shabelle dried out, I think, four times. We've seen that, you know, there's low rainfall in the Ethiopian highlands that provide water to Somalia, the groundwater that we receive to Somalia. And then there is, of course, the dam activities also reducing the flows to Somalia. So this is not going away soon. Climate change is affecting how things are happening in Somalia. And because of all these reasons, I think we should, in fact, focus first on Somalia's institution building, because our response, the reason why this is such a crisis in Somalia and not a crisis in other countries that neighbor us, is because of our institutions and our ability to respond well. So I think the first place is working with government, existing government, rebuild its institutions, and then come up with ways with which we can provide livelihoods that are independent of, you know, agriculture and all of these things that have currently been happening.
Martin, we focused our debate on Somalia, and then we moved to the Horn of Africa. But you look at the vast territory that stretches all the way from the Horn of Africa towards sub-Saharan Africa, bigger than Europe, with a massive population there, the same trend, the same pattern, a potential for prolonged droughts and also potential for famine. However, this time, if you go to the UN, you talk to world leaders, I think they seem to be really busy with what's going on in the Ukraine, to the point where people are not really in a mood to deliver, to provide assistance now. What do you think we should be doing to move forward?
Well, you're right. There's a certain bandwidth of international attention that I've noticed and that we've all witnessed. There's a limited amount of attention that the international community, you know, has at its whim. And Ukraine, of course, is taking the oxygen in a huge way. But what was interesting, that in the so-called high-level week in New York about a week ago, I was really pleased to see that this issue of climate and famine and floods, of course, look at Pakistan, where I was also recently, is beginning to get some traction into getting attention. And this is, I think, also important because this is about injustice. This is about an injustice, as Adam was saying. People of Somalia have done nothing to create this. They are the ones going to teach a hard lesson to people like me about the consequences of my behavior that they are living out. And I think that we should be mobilizing international opinion, official, unofficial, civil society, youth, to be aware of our obligations to people in the world, not only to people in our neighborhood. It's incredibly important.
Thank you.
And we've seen it work before. I'm absolutely positive we can see it work again. We may be a little late for Somalia, but as you say, there are other parts of Africa when Ethiopia, God forbid, declared famine in their Somali region. We'll see even worse to come.
Let's hope the international community takes action and brings back hope to the people of Somalia and many people in different parts of the world. Martin Griffiths, Adam Awhersi, Samir Agad, I really appreciate your insight and looking forward to talking to you in the near future. And thank you for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Al-Bara, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.